don't let yourself think that your point of view doesn't matter to them. It does. They're just not going to tell you that it does, because again, they want that separation between themselves, sexuality, and their parent, as they should want.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Welcome back to Made for More. I am your host, Holly J. Moore. I am a divorce lawyer who is passionate about helping all of us to use the challenges in our life to grow and show up as the best versions of ourselves. We are joined today by Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife, a relationship and sexuality coach. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we've had a couple other relationship coaches and sex therapists on the show before, but what I think is interesting about the work that you do is you do this within a faith-based community, correct?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So is there anything different about doing this work in a faith-based community versus in a secular community?
Yes and no. I mean, I think even secular parents care a lot about the question of values and what values they're offering to their children. But of course, in a religious community, there's often an overarching assumed value of no sex until marriage. Generally speaking, more anxiety, I think, about sex itself. Some fear that teaching your kids will make them go have sex or make them do things that go counter to the faith's values. So it is a little bit challenging helping people to have both healthy sexuality and their religious lives intact at the same time.
Yes, I could definitely see that. one of the things that's always been, I don't know if the word is fascinating, ironic, or something else, but you know, when you're raised to not have sex prior to marriage, and that's really been instilled in you in a very strong way. Yeah. You know, one day this is like absolute sin. And then the next day you're just supposed to, you know, be the sexual tigress or tiger.
Right.
And to me, that felt like a hard leap to make. Is that a part of your coaching and counseling?
Yes. So I help parents know how to talk to their kids, but the group I work primarily with is adults, and I started my work working especially with women who had learned a lot of shame and fear and kind of the idea that their value is connected to suppressing sexuality, to being virginal and virtuous. And so that transition from non-marriage to marriage was a stark one, and where many women found, like, I have no relationship to my sexuality. In fact, I've learned to suppress it. And now I'm supposed to have access to something in a way that I don't even know how to relate to, other than from a frame of duty, like the marital duty. And of course, that never goes well.
Right. Yeah. So because I really do want to focus most of our discussion on how we talk to our kids about this, because I think that is just such a valuable discussion that we probably don't talk about enough. And now we have an expert to help us do that. So, but that being said, of sort of making this transition to, you know, one day you're, you know, what word did you use?
Virginal? Yeah, virginal or, you know, yeah. Like you go from zero sex and now I should have sex.
Right.
That's a tough transition. Yeah.
Yes. Let me ask the question first. When we're talking to our kids about sex and it is a value of ours, of our parents, of our faith, of our moral compass to wait until you're married, how do you talk to your kids about that? Do you stay staunch in that value and like lay down the rule? Or are we supposed to be more realistic about it, thinking, okay, that's maybe most, you know, kids, young adults won't do that? How do we navigate that?
Well, I don't think it's valuable to, you know, quote unquote, lay down the rule, in the sense that your children are going to grow up to be their own decision makers and they're going to be making choices. So I don't think a parent should think of their job of making sure they get their child to the altar as a virgin, and that's their only goal.
Right.
I think the way a parent wants to think about it is, I want to offer my children the healthiest relationship to their body and their sexuality, including offering my values to them about how to be in relationship to this. The biggest challenge for people is not that they have values or that they have restrictions on when they ought to be sexual or not be sexual. The problem is when we shame it, when we create a lot of fear around sexuality. Whether you have sex only in marriage or outside of marriage, if you have been offered a lot of fear and shame about sexuality and your own body and your capacity for pleasure, you're going to have trouble. If you believe sexuality is a valuable part of life, something that can be a part of joy and connection and a meaningful pleasure in your life, even if you save it till marriage, right, and do it because you value sexuality, you can have a very healthy relationship to it, even if you're very particular about the context in which you choose to be sexual. So what I'm often teaching parents is that you want to really consider how you've related to this. And, you know, can you relate to sexuality as a positive part of the human experience as a starting point for having some of these conversations with your kids? Because if you see it as a valuable thing, and therefore you want to be careful and you want to be protective about where you're sexual, that's a very different meaning than it's a shameful and scary thing, and that's why you shouldn't be sexual.
Yes. Okay. So at what age should we start the conversation with our kids?
Well, I would say, you know, like literally sitting them down and talking to them about reproduction and what is, you know, heterosexual sex and so on. I think that's around age 7 or 8. Okay. But I am teaching parents, you want to basically always be teaching them on some level about what intimate sexuality is. And when they are a newborn baby and a toddler, you're teaching them all about how valuable they are, how much pleasure and delight you have in just being with them, by kissing them, holding them. That's the kind of core meaning of really good sex as an adult, is I take deep pleasure in your presence. That's what is at the core of good sex. So you're already teaching your child a lot about their value, about love, about the goodness of the body, through just loving them, taking delight in them as a young child. Then as they move into toddlerhood and start moving, you know, you start needing to teach them about self-inhibition. You know, that you can't touch yourself there when you're at school. You know, you need to keep your clothes on when the neighbor comes to visit. You start teaching them distinctions between public and private. And that matters, but the way you do it matters. Like, do you shame them about the body, or you just teach them this is personal, this is private, we need to cover up when the neighbor comes? It's not shaming, it's just making a distinction between holding their dignity and the dignity of others by making a private public distinction. So you're just having those conversations. You can touch your own body, but you don't touch your friend's body. You know, that's mm-hmm. like you're helping them make those distinctions. Talking to them about the specifics of sex happens around age 7 or 8. And then in that pre-adolescent stage leading up to adolescence, that's really when parents have an opportunity to really offer their values around sexuality, to have ongoing conversations, because that's a period when kids are very open to their parents, open to how their parents think about things, are willing to really understand their parents' perspective. Once they're an adolescent, that, you know, they're moving more into referencing their peers. They're sorting out for themselves what they think. They still care what the parent thinks, but they're not as receptive or willing to sit down and have a conversation at that point. So that 8 to 12 period is like the golden age of really offering your values around sexuality.
Okay. And how, because again, my producer Aaron and I were talking before the show, or before we, you know, brought you on, I think maybe even in the first segment, that it is very awkward. Well, it doesn't seem you are actually making it sound actually really beautiful and easy and natural. And I'm like, gosh, I really wish I would have, you know, talked to you about 16 years ago. But you know, prior to this conversation, it feels like a very awkward topic to broach yes. with your 8 to 12 year old. So how can we bring it up, you know, and try to minimize the awkwardness?
Well, I would say talking more about the body and so on, just like when your child asks a question at age 5, you know, like where do babies come from or something, you know, just being, if you start to get kind of freaked out and you know, they track that. And then they're kind of like, there's something about this that is scary to ask about. So I think the more you can be comfortable, you are giving your child signals about how open of a conversation this is. At the same time, I would say kids, parents, and sexuality don't mix for a reason. Like, we have a natural recoil because it's somewhat protective to do that. And so I don't think we have to shame ourselves for feeling a bit of awkwardness about teaching our kids about intercourse, which I think for most kids is a little bit overwhelming. Like, they have a natural repellent response to it because that protects them. So I don't think you have to think, wow, I just have so much shame, that's why this is a hard conversation. I think it's hard because it's important. The child needs to know it, but it's also a little bit out of sight of their understanding. It's a little bit outside of your comfort to bring this innocent child into something as strange as sexuality. I do think that it can help to have a book that you know, that has pictures.
Okay, good. That was going to be one of my questions is how do you feel about getting, I mean, I remember when my girls were smaller, they loved their American Girl dolls. Yes. An American Girl had like an amazing book.
Yes.
I was like, did I take the easy way out? I mean, I think, you know, you probably have to be open to discussing what's in the book, but I'm like, maybe that was the easy way out.
I think it's a brilliant way to do it because you can sit there and a child can sit next to you and they can look at that. They can ask questions without having to look you in the face.
Yes, right. You
know? I mean, there is a natural inhibition there that I think is okay. And I remember, you know, my son hearing a word at school. He might have been 10 years old. He came home and he knew I would know the answer. So he's like, Mom, what does this word mean? And I said, I'm happy to tell you. It might be a little bit embarrassing for you. Do you want me to talk about it? So he just put his head down. I said, okay, go. You know? Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute.
Like, I want to know. I don't know how else to figure it out, but this is a little uncomfortable. So, you know, that's okay. It really is okay. Nice. So, you know, I sat next to my kids. They could ask questions, but then I left the book and maybe a couple other there that they could just look at and read. You know, I did tell them later about, you know, menstruation and wet dreams and so on. But I also left the American Girl book, you know, other books around that they could just in their own space and time, just read about it, make sense of it. And I think that that's really okay. I think it's just good if they can track that you see this as a good thing, that it's understandable if it's a little overwhelming to them at first. But I think it's good to give the message that with time, you'll understand it more and it will make more sense to you. It'll feel more desirable to you. Yeah, I remember thinking, oh, my goodness, like, I want to have children, but I have to do that, you know?
Right. Yes.
And yet it's true that, like, just in time, you can give your child a message that in time that will feel more like a desirable idea to you and it will feel good to you. So so I think that's all OK. And especially important, I think, is to give the value that this, when you love someone and you're in a committed relationship with them, this can be a wonderful part of life. This is a way of feeling loved and caring about your spouse. And so, you know, you're going to see lots of people, if you value waiting till marriage, you can say, look, you're going to ultimately decide, this is why dad and I, or, you know, or mom and I value this. This is why it's meant something to us to wait. You will make your decisions about that. But if you choose not to wait until marriage, then you need to be careful in these ways. I think that's perfectly important to give them the sense that you're not afraid of this. It's not because you're ashamed and fearful that you're offering this value. You understand that they have choices. And this is things for them to be aware of and to be careful about. But ultimately, they have to determine for themselves what they value and how they choose to be in relationship to their sexuality.
Okay, I like that. That makes a whole lot of sense. And I'm like, why didn't I just already know that? Like, it has seemed difficult to navigate, but the way you articulated it, it makes so much sense. And I think that's a really healthy way to approach it.
There's a lot of fear. I mean, there's nothing strange about that. It's a big deal. You know, we want to be protective of our children. We live in a world where, you know, sexual liberalism is really the kind of major ethos. And so sorting out, I don't want to give them shame. I do want to give them values. They're in a, you know, a very diverse world. How do I do that in a wise way? I don't think there's anything particularly intuitive about that. And yeah, it's not good to have shame be the reason why you say you should wait. But if you can be valuing sexuality and valuing your own soul, I think that's a legit reason to be conservative in your sexual decision making.
Right. Okay. I remember my parents, they would always tell me, it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful act, which now I'm like, oh, maybe they did a good job, you know, with like taking the shame out of it. But at the time, I remember it was just disgusting. I'm like, stop saying that. It's so gross.
Yeah.
So what do we do if we're met with just complete disgust from our kids?
I just normalize it. Say, when I was your age, I thought the same thing. That's okay. Normal and that's healthy, because for someone your age, it isn't a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's your body and mind rejecting something that you ought to reject. When you become a grown-up, it will make more sense to you. It will feel right to you. You will want to be close to another person in this way. And it's okay you don't feel that way right now. 100% okay.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love that. How often should we be talking about this to our kids? Let's take, you know, the starting at 8 years old. How often should we be talking about this?
Well, I think that you want to have kind of the major conversation, as in, this is how it works. Here's some of the ways that people will refer to it. You'll hear people talk about it in the media, on movies, and so on. You want to talk to them about the existence of pornography, that they're going to run into things. So how often? It's a little bit hard to, I would just say it's a little bit of an ongoing conversation. You want to be available to those topics that you hear come up, that you hear your kids addressing. Being in the car is a great time to talk about things, because everybody's looking forward.
Yes. You don't have to be eye to eye. Yes.
They can't get out.
But there's also an end. Like, they know it won't go on forever, because you're going to be at point B pretty soon. Yep. So there will be an end.
That's right. And they might be like, oh, I don't want to. That's okay. That's all normal that they're going to say that. They still do care what you think. And they still are using that as a reference point as they're navigating their peer relationships and the world. So don't let yourself think that your point of view doesn't matter to them. It does. They're just not going to tell you that it does, because, again, they want that separation between themselves, sexuality, and their parent, as they should want. But, you know, they are still referencing you. So, you know, I think that you can, if you're watching a movie, let's say, and there's some ad that comes on that's about using sex to sell something, you could comment on it. You can say, yeah, that's a lot of people do that. They try to use the body and nudity to sell beer. They try to sell, you know, things that way. It's just like helping your kids be more educated consumers of the messaging that's out there by just seeing your perspective. You don't want to get too anxious or uptight or judgmental. Just more matter of fact that you're going to see a lot of different values. You're going to see people that really think about this differently. This is how I think about it. This is how Dad thinks about it. You'll need to figure out what you think about it, right? So it's really offering it wholeheartedly, but also offering them the autonomy to sort out their own minds around sexuality and what they value.
Okay. And so speaking of them kind of sorting it out on their own, you know, when we were kids, or at least when I was a kid, we didn't necessarily have Google. We didn't really have the internet to just go and have all sorts of information at our disposal.
Yeah,
kids now do. How do we as parents navigate that?
Oh, it's such a tough question, because I really do think that it's just an unhealthy environment that we need more regulation around. That is to say, you know, when I was growing up, you had sort of kids' channels. You had times when there were kids' shows on, and then there was adult shows. And now kind of kids can just sort of access almost anything.
Right.
And it's just outside of their developmental age. And so we need more protections for our kids around this. You can certainly do things about limiting screen time, screen access. You can put filters on your house. You can do your best. It's not easy, and it's not parents' fault that it's so challenging right now, because we have a technology that has exploded and we really haven't had the time to catch up. And it's had kind of unequivocally negative effects on our kids, not just around pornography and sexual information, just screen time and so on. That's really kind of interfered, I think, to a large degree with our kids having some of the protection and privacy that they need to cultivate a sense of who they actually are in the world. So I wish I had better answers. I think it's doing your best to be protective. And the longer your kids, it's tough because their friends have screens and all that. But
right.
The more you can limit your kids' screen access, I think the more you protect their childhood and their innocence, which is important to their healthy development.
Yeah. You mentioned protection and privacy, and I was going to ask you this question anyway, but, you know, I'm a divorce lawyer, and so I see a lot of marriages breaking down and the reasons why, and oftentimes it revolves around sex, and we've had sex therapists and relationship coaches, like I said, on the show before, and there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, discrepancies in desire or certain sexual interests and things like that. And I think, you know, my overarching sort of takeaway from all of those is, you know, within the sanctity of a marriage, like there's all sorts of things that you can do that are healthy, again, within the sanctity of a marriage, that, you know, maybe are provocative or, 100%. You know what I'm saying? I mean, one example I'm thinking of is like, you know, sending spicy pics to your spouse. Sure. You know, we had a husband coach on the show and he's like a big proponent of that. And I get it. I am down with that.
Yeah.
But how do we separate, you know, those things that you do within a healthy marriage that has healthy intimacy and all of those things? Like, how do you navigate that with your kids in terms of telling them, you know, this is healthy inside of a marriage, but please do not ever send a nude picture of yourself when you're not married, you know?
Yeah, so I have an online course and I really go through like, at what age do you start having these conversations? And this is certainly one of them around just, you know, if you're ever using your sexuality to get someone to like you, to get attention, that's not good for you to do that, to use your sexuality. If you are putting stuff on the internet, it is very risky to your overall well-being because you don't know, meaning even if it's just Snapchat or something, people get screenshots and you are losing hold of your privacy in a way that really matters. And so, you know, in my course, I talk to parents a lot about how to talk to their kids about protecting their privacy, how important this is to their well-being, how important it is to protect themselves and the family in this way. And just having very honest conversations about how they can do that. Of course, that's different than saying it's never okay to have a picture of yourself exist. You know, if you're in marriage and this is like, you know, something that between you that's shared and that you both respect one another, that can be a wonderful part of life. But that's very different than the risk of, you know, and especially as adolescents who maybe don't anticipate these risks, being able to talk to them about this could far outlast you in a way that really works against you. So be very careful with who you share private information with or share pictures of yourself with. And to validate, it feels great to get approval. It feels great to have someone be attracted to you sexually. There's nothing strange about the fact that that feels good, but you want to be careful that you don't use it in a way that harms you. And so the more candid you can be about that, dressing sexy feels good, right? Getting attention feels good. Attraction feels good. A lot of times as parents, it's hard for us to name that. We don't want to talk about the fact that our
sexuality. You do it so well, though. I'm like, gosh, you have the most perfect words. Can I just put you in my pocket?
So, I mean, exactly. My husband has said, you know, you'd sell a lot more courses if it was like how to have Jennifer talk to your kids about sex.
Yes, right. Yes.
Yeah. So it's not comfortable. Once you catch the vision, I think, as a parent, it gets easier because you realize I'm not trying to shame them. I'm trying to just offer them a realistic understanding and how they can work in their own interests, how they can be protective of themselves, because sexuality really is a good thing. And therefore, they ought to safeguard it on some level because they do value it and because they value themselves. So I think when it's offered in that way, it takes on an entirely different meaning rather than this is this shameful thing that I really shouldn't do that, even though I want that person's attention. Instead, no, this is about being smart for my own sake.
Right. I think the thing that you do so beautifully, though, is like you have remembered to just be very real about it. I think as parents, sometimes we forget to just be real about it. Like when you said, like, yes, dressing sexy does feel good. Like being desired by somebody else does feel good. Like I think as parents, we block that part out for our kids because we're afraid for them or whatever. Exactly. And so we completely miss that piece or we intentionally 100%. Like shove it down and pretend that that doesn't exist.
Yes. And I'm so really much a disservice to our kids because they're like, well, mom and dad can't handle this topic. So I'm just going to have to figure that out on my own because they are going to be feeling all those feelings. And then they're just navigating it without your input or your perspective on it. So in the course I teach, I have parents talking to their kids about desire and pleasure kind of right up front, you know, like this is a real part of what the experience is about. And there's a lot of people that want to manipulate your desires and being aware that advertisers and other people may try to manipulate that is just a way to be protective of yourself. Also to not manipulate someone else's desires, right? So it gives them a way of understanding what's actually happening that allows them to bring more values to it and to be more prudent about it.
Yes, I love that. That is so wonderful. And I definitely want to make sure that we link the classes that you have because they sound like they're super valuable. So thank you so much for being on the show and thank you for all the information. Like this was a really great discussion. I feel like I kind of have a whole new perspective about it. And I'm like, okay, actually I do have one last question. Like, is it ever too late? Like my kids are a little bit older now. They're, you know, I've got two teenagers and one 11-year-old. I'm like, gosh, is it too late? Did I do it wrong?
No, it's not too late. And I think, you know, I think when a parent even comes and says, listen, I knew that now your child might be like, okay, mom, I get it. But remember, I do care what you think. Okay. So if you're coming and saying, look, I know coming out of my own childhood, my own upbringing, I know I tended to lean in this way. I know that wasn't helpful. I'm sorry about that because I've thought about it more. And this is really what I think now. That really does help them. I mean, it gives them permission to see it differently. It can help them sort out or relate to it in a different way when they see their parents say, I think I got this wrong. And this is what I really think is better. It helps. So, ideally we start young and early, but it's just having those conversations at all means a lot. I mean, my mom did not do a good job at all in talking about sex. I think it scared her. She, you know, avoided it at all costs.
Yeah.
And, you know, then I grew up to do this work. And even when she said to me, you know, I was probably in my 30s when she said it to me, she just said, I'm just so glad that you're doing this work for people. I wish I could have done a better job by you. And that just meant a lot to me. It's not that you know, it really changed a lot, but it still meant something to me that she wished she'd had the ability to do it differently and that she validated, you know, what I was doing presently. Mm-hmm. And I think that meant something to me. And so kids are always caring what their parents think. So it's never too late.
Yes. Even as adults, we care what our parents think. Yes. It never ends.
It's true.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Holly.
I've got just a little bit more to say. We often talk about how important it is to dive into the uncomfortable and do the internal work and all of those things for the benefit of ourselves. But we also have to do that for the benefit of our kids. And as a divorce lawyer, as I mentioned quite frequently, I see so many relationships where intimacy and sex is a huge stumbling block for that relationship. And probably if we dove further into that, we would find out it was something that occurred a long time ago, maybe in their childhood. Maybe their parents didn't talk to them about sex in a healthy way. Maybe they didn't impress upon them how this can be a beautiful part of a relationship. So let's not make those same mistakes with our kids. Let's do the uncomfortable thing and let's start talking to our kids early and often about sex and how it is such an important aspect of a relationship. And I know you can do it because you were made for more.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.